The following Dharma talk was recorded in March 2013 in St. Louis, Missouri. It is one of five recordings from the retreat called Dana, Sila, and Bhavana, A Gradual Path of Awakening, taught by Bridget Rollins and John Yaffe. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. The retreat's teachers, Bridget and John, are co-leaders of the St. Louis Insight Meditation Group. More information about them can be found at www.dharmastl.org.
So, welcome back. One of the fun things about this co-leading that Bridget and I do together is we both get to make opening remarks. And there's this, I think there's an overlap to a degree, but there's also this sense of coming at the same material from different perspectives, which hopefully makes it a little more alive for you. You know, if one person says it's an opinion, if two people say it, it must be the truth. Although, actually, I think you all know that at the heart of the Buddha's teaching is the idea that regardless of where wisdom is fed to you, we all need to validate it in our direct experience. So I'm playing with you a little bit. But Bridget and I, we were talking earlier, we do enjoy the work together that we do. So this opening path to, this gradual path to awakening, these steps that we call dana, sila, and bhavana, they're a progression that begins with dana, or generosity. And generosity as a practice helps us break up conditioned patterns of craving and clinging. But it's also a spiritual experience at the same time that it's a practice. And as a spiritual experience, dana opens both mind and heart. It rewards us with feelings of connectedness, the joy of being present, the ease and well-being that comes from being non-harming or even helpful, and the sense of freedom that arises whenever greed and aversion are overcome, even if only briefly. You know, one of the things as beginners, we may have this impression that we're supposed to become generous or become mindful or become moral in some blanket obsessive or, you know, perpetual way, and it's simply not true to our nature. And it doesn't need to be. If we are mindful, we see when we are being skillful and wholesome, and we see equally when we are not. And over time, we become clearer about which is which and which we prefer. So, you don't need to become total and absolute on day one. Good news, eh? With dana as a wholesome first step, we move into sila, moral conduct. Knowing morality not only treats others in a wholesome manner, but serves us as an ever-deepening spiritual practice. There is a purification that comes with sila, and this gives our lives a sense of ease, well-being, peacefulness, and stability of mind. And these qualities then become a sure foundation for the work we do cultivating the mental disciplines of bhavana. So we teach these one at a time, and they can be seen as linear, first one, then the next, then the next. And this does make a kind of conceptual sense. I can make a case for it. And since this logic helps ease the mind, this view can be helpful. But, or I should say and, because Matt Flickstein taught us always to say and not but. And at the same time, this logic, at the same time, it's probably more accurate to see these not as laying out in a straight, flat path, but rather as akin to moving up a spiral staircase, where we go around from one to the other and back again, in a sense, going in a circle, while at the same time, moving forward and upward. We revisit each of these again and again, each time bringing greater wisdom to the experience and embracing it more fully, going deeper into both the practice and the direct experience they offer. Let this spiral staircase aspect of the teachings work for you and comfort you. For about half of you, this is your first retreat, which is really very cool. And I'm happy you're here. It's very possible you will be exposed, since you are new, to completely new teachings. And some of what you hear may go right past you. Relax. You'll revisit these and have plenty of opportunity to assimilate and master them. Not just this weekend, but long after. There is no pressure and no need to rush. There is no place to go but here, and the only work you have to do is to open yourself to all that being here holds. Others of you may be right in the midst of studying and cultivating one or more of these, and you will be right in your element. All I can say to you is dig in and enjoy, and hopefully you'll pick up some tips. And still others may feel you've moved past these to work on other, perhaps nominally more profound issues or practices. If you have any sense of having grown past this work, please do your best to set that view aside. Instead, challenge yourself to go deeper into them, deeper than you've ever gone before. Empty your cup of knowledge and refill it. You may be pleased to find it tastes fresh again. Wherever you are on your journey, do your best to let go of fixed views as to how these feel and how you should act on them. Without fixed views, at any given point, we can ask, where is the opportunity to cultivate and express dana or sila or bhavana right now? The Buddha gave us a tremendous example of this when he said that even if one throws away the rinsing from a pot or cup into a village pool or pond, by wishing that the living beings there may feed on them, even this would be a source of merit. So, if discarding wastewater, if taking out the trash, can be wholesome and have merit, we can look for this everywhere. It's there. We just have to open to seeing it. And one last opening remark, although it's an extensive one, and I'm building on my metaphor, so watch out. About the ego, about our sense of self, our tendency toward attachments and pride, these are luggage we carry with us on the spiral staircase. At the beginning of our journey, our climb, if you will, all of the practice is new, and there is a quality of novelty and discovery to it all. And our progress feels good to us. We may think we need to make room for our achievements in our luggage, which is to say we may become prideful of our journeying or our journey and want to carry that pride and those achievements with us. We may discard old items in our luggage and replace them with what we now feel is more valuable, or we may try to keep all the old stuff and simply cram the new in with it. Whichever we do, we find we then have to drag whatever we are carrying with us on every step as we continue our journey. At some point, we realize it's all burden. Our old stories about self, our new stories about our improved self, it's all a burden. We're still learning as we go, and at one point we may pause to rummage through our luggage and discard some of what we once held to be valuable while retaining some of the rest, typically our newest acquisitions. And later on we realize we simply don't need luggage on this journey. We just leave it on the stairs. The slow dawning realization that we don't need to carry all this self stuff with you wherever you go is part of the journey itself. And it takes time to figure this out. So be gentle with yourself as you figure it out. There's no need to give yourself grief when you realize you've been making the trip more difficult than it needs to be. Just put your burden down, as I'm sure we hear from evangelical sources, and enjoy the lightness on the rest of your journey. And one last thought, whatever you do, when you come across someone else's discarded luggage, don't stop to rummage through it searching for new valuables. Okay, had enough metaphor? So let's talk about Donna. We often think of generosity simply in terms of giving. And we tend to think of giving as something separate and different from other actions. But my primary teacher, Matt Flickstein, used to make the point, or probably still does, that we're always giving something in everything we do, even internally in our thinking. So one of the things he says is we're always giving, it's only a question of what. And that makes the practice somewhat unique in this case, because it's not the practice isn't something we turn on and turn off. It's simply a practice of becoming aware of what we're always doing all the time. Actually, there are two questions. What are you giving? And to whom, or possibly what, are you giving it? Right now, for example, you're probably giving your attention to what I'm saying. But you could be giving your attention to something that happened yesterday at work or home. Or you could be giving your attention to thoughts about the future. What you're going to be having for lunch. What am I having for lunch? And as for the what, the quality of that attention could be interested and open-hearted, eager for discovery, possibly open-minded as well as open-hearted, or it could be flavored by aversion, craving, restlessness, boredom, or doubt. We're always giving something, but what and to whom? We can attune our mindfulness to these questions and become more aware of our dana. One useful focus of the awareness can be to investigate if our intentions and actions are wholesome and skillful or not. What is the intention driving the gift? The Buddha spoke of three broad categories of this. He spoke of something he called one-handed giving. Bridget referred to the giving that doesn't quite let go last night. Giving can be reluctant or manipulative. For that matter, giving can be demanded of us or coerced. I think of United Way drives at big corporations where it's like, give or lose your chances for advancement in the company. When these or similar factors are present, we need to become aware that generosity in its true sense may not be the primary intention working at all. Most likely, we are motivated in these circumstances by fear or desire. You can recognize these in your mind and feel their workings in your body if you pause to be present. These other intentions may make perfect sense given the circumstances, so there's no need to condemn them or to judge ourselves for having them, but it can be very helpful to see them for what they are. The second category the Buddha described is called friendly giving, giving freely because it feels good, coming out of a healthy sense of self, not a reaction to pressure. You see somebody in a situation of need and you have enough for yourself, especially if you have more than enough, you give it out of friendliness. Here there is a sense of generosity in proportion or in balance with other factors. So the sense of self is present and operating, but it's doing so in a reasonably wholesome context. You've treated me well in the past, I'm happy to treat you well now. It's only fair. Or you're in need, I have more than enough, so why not? And the third category is called noble or kingly giving, transcendent giving, giving that's free of the sense of self. And free of concern for the economics of the gift, free from the sense of weighing things in the balance. In noble giving, you give anything at any time. You give the shirt off your back. You give the last food you have to someone who you know is hungrier. You hold nothing back. You give the best of what you have. There is no holding on or even thought of an I involved in the giving. You might think of this as an extension of a parent's willingness to sacrifice on behalf of children, extended to those with whom we may see no traditional affiliation or connection. And that's why it's called noble or kingly. Kingly in the sense of being part of what you do for your entire domain of awareness. So these are three aspects of giving to be aware of. We can be mindful of to whom our thoughts and actions are directed, to the self, to those nearby or to whom we have affiliation or attachment, to those far away and unknown as individuals. Do we have a connection with what's real, or are we generously indulging our imagination? Are we giving to the direct recipient, or are there other indirect recipients or targets involved? Note that if there are multiple recipients, there most certainly can be different motivations working for each. So you can posit a case where someone is quote-unquote helping the poor, but doing so while the press are watching. So there is indeed a gift being given to the poor, which does indeed have value. And in that dimension, there might even be a friendly or a kingly giving. But on the other hand, there's this sense of I'm being watched and don't I look good? So there's other things going on at the same time. Another question of matching or suitability comes up. Is what we are giving in line with our resources, the energy available to us, our talents, our material resources? Have we found the middle path between holding too much back and overextending ourselves, which we can also do? And note that this question of balance is a concern in the case of friendly giving, but may not come up in the case of noble or kingly giving. So we can also look at giving in terms of the near enemies of generosity, things that pose as generosity but really undermine it. Giving contaminated by any of the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. Giving based on the goal of getting rid of the recipient. In 12-step, there's this expression, take what you like and leave. And sometimes when I'm in a foul mood, take what you like and leave the rest. And sometimes when I'm in a foul mood, I just say, take what you like and leave. Save fewer words. It's an economy. Giving that fosters dependency or exploitation, the need for clear comprehension arises, and evaluation giving the method that the Buddha offered to his son Rahula, where he said, in the contemplation of any action, generosity or morality, we can contemplate what are my intentions, and we can think that through before we act. And if the intentions are wholesome, we move forward with them. If they're not, we don't. But we don't stop there. We act in the world, and in the middle of our action, which is to say as we're going, in the course of our generosity, if it's an ongoing process, we evaluate, how is this working? How does this feel to me? How is it working for the recipient? And then even after we're completely done, we can look back and say, what were the final outcomes? Does this have merit? Because sometimes our giving fosters dependency or is insufficient to actually meet the need. So someone may have a desperate need and we're giving them enough that it whets their hunger for the need but doesn't really satiate it. So we really need, if we're getting engaged with people, there's an appropriateness in the context of clear comprehension to say, how is this really working for me and for the other person? And lastly, we should be concerned, as in terms of the near enemies of generosity, with giving that builds or reinforces the sense of self. We need to be especially concerned about this if we find ourselves striving for or clinging to the idea of noble giving. The essence of this is selflessness, and when we pursue or cling to ideas of this for ourselves, we may well be dealing with the near enemy. What's so interesting here is that investigating the factors driving or present in our generosity can be profoundly revealing and helpful to our practice. So I'm not laying all this stuff out to just bum you out and say, ugh. The less wholesome the action or its motivation, the more important and useful it can be to see this clearly. In addition to being shaped by external conditions, they may be influenced by internal ones, especially a damaged or vulnerable sense of self, feelings of fear or dread, feelings of inadequacy, and the like. We may feel we have nothing of value to give, or no gifts that aren't diminished in value by our deficiencies. If we have such self-views and can see this, and our identification with them, if we can see these impersonally and with an open heart, we can give ourselves the healing attention we need. At such time, generosity needs to begin with ourselves, expressing itself as compassion and concern. Being kind and caring to yourself is not a lesser form of generosity. It may well be the most meaningful of expression of it there can be in the circumstances present, in a difficult here and now. Our self-view can be a knot that needs to be untied to set generosity free. Change, weaken the grip, heal, or entirely drop such negative self-views, and wholesome generosity directed to others becomes both possible and natural, possibly in the very next moment. And this brings up another interesting thing illuminated by mindfulness of generosity, which is that when we investigate our intentions, we may find they are in rapid flux, flavored by self-interest one minute, but completely free and open-hearted the next. To judge any of these harshly, or to cherish others for that matter, is to fail to understand their inherent impermanence, and to indulge aversion or craving, fearing that they are permanent or desperately wanting them to be, both of which shut down the open heart. I've said a lot about the obstacles to generosity, the ways in which it can be defiled or distorted, and on a positive note, how to investigate and work with these challenges. But I want to finish on this topic by touching on the sheer beauty and immeasurable quality of generosity when it is well and truly present. As I finish this talk, take a moment to assume your meditation posture, if you're not already in it, and close your eyes. Consider how pure and purifying generosity feels. It is a prominent manifestation of metta, of loving kindness. So I thought we could look to a brief excerpt of the Metta Sutta, the Buddha's teaching on loving kindness, to connect with this. So in the original teaching, there's a portion that I just find exquisite that says, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downward to the depths. Outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. This excerpt describes offering protection, which of course is a manifestation of both metta and generosity of spirit. If we broaden this only slightly, we can paraphrase it as follows. Even as a mother devotes herself to generosity in caring for her child, her only child, so, with a boundless heart, should one be generous toward all living beings, radiating generosity over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downward to the depths, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. So let's take just a moment to open to the idea of a limitless blossoming of generosity within you experience for just a little while, or longer if you wish, how this might feel.